It's Sal Capaccio.
Filling up right behind the Bills bench right now with their flags and their hey, 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 hey.
Hey, hey, hey,
hey. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
Let's go Buffalo chant.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
How do they do it, Bulldog? How does the NFL continue to feed us more news items?
We're idiots.
Are we idiots or are we grateful idiots? I'm happy to have, oh great, more owners meetings. We can talk about the same stuff from the last owners meetings and see what happens.
Minneapolis, by the way, Sal, Minneapolis? Like, where's the ocean? Where's the surf? Where's the palm beaches or something? Like, Minneapolis, I visited, I enjoyed it. I'm just stunned that the owners are meeting in Minneapolis. It doesn't seem like the sexiest locale.
Yeah, well, listen, and you would think that the owners might want, but it is more warmer temperatures, so you could go a little bit more. You don't have to go south or west necessarily. Also, just to be clear for everybody, I'm not there because this isn't one where a lot of the media just kind of, you know, converges on. You'll get some national media there, but you don't get local stuff going on, right? You're not going to get a bunch of interviews with GMs and head coaches like we do in the March owners meetings. So I'm guessing the reason they do a place like Minneapolis is make it a little bit more of a central location, I guess, in the country to make it easier for all the owners versus just saying, hey, let's go somewhere warm where all the media can come out and shine and make us all look great and, you know, what we're doing out here.
I know they get to choose whether they're available or not, but really, I think they went to Minneapolis because they know you won't come.
Well, hey, Minneapolis is a great city, by the way. It really is cool to go. You said that, and I know that the meetings are just by the Vikings Stadium, and I saw some pictures today. It was raining over there, and apparently Justin Jefferson stopped by after the flag football vote as well. So they got some players on board to come over there and do that. Mm-hmm. But and Minneapolis did host a Super Bowl. Did they? Not two yet, right? They haven't had one in the new stadium yet. I don't think so.
I don't believe they have.
I think they have.
When did they do that?
I'm thinking of the friend of mine who went, but I don't know the game. Patriots and somebody, maybe? I think they did. Just to the point, West Palm Beach right now feels like 94. Minneapolis, however, feels like 37 and rain, as Sal said. So they didn't draw the lucky straw when it came to weather.
Yeah, you're right. No. Super Bowl 18, Eagles over the Patriots was there.
Super Bowl...
No.
That's not Super Bowl 18. That's
No, 2018.
Sorry. There you go. Sorry. That game was in Minnesota.
What I just told you I don't know what LII means. So I went with the year that was in what I got when
52. I Googled. 52. Okay, we thank got you. There. All right.
Good.
So it's the tush push again, and it's the playoff seeding thing again. There are betting markets on whether these things pass. The bettors think the tush push will be banned. And that the playoff reseeding idea will not make it. Does either of those outcomes, if that's what we get, would they surprise you?
Nothing would surprise me in these meetings. So even if you told me the opposite there, it wouldn't surprise me. The reason I say that is generally what happens is when you have the meetings in March that I go to and you get something tabled, that means there's not enough support. So if you get to May and there's not enough support, then it doesn't surprise me. However, what a lot of times happens, and I think this is happening with the tush push or with the playoff seeding or one of them, when the league wants kind of something to happen, they table it and then they make calls and they literally do...
campaigning,
you know,
kind of?
Yeah. Yes, campaigning. Right. And, you know, what do you call those people in Washington?
Lobbyists.
Go around and,
lobbyists.
Thank you very much. They do lobbying. Thank you, Bulldog. And they do lobbying, and you get to May, and the league kind of gets what it kind of sort of wanted but didn't want to come out and say themselves. So in those cases, I would not be surprised at anything that really happens in May because you really have – the March stuff that didn't have enough support, but you do have the league kind of pushing it forward a little bit more because they want it to get there.
Hasn't it been asserted, I feel like, that happened with the Lions and this playoff seeding proposal? Like that the league office, I feel like I've read it at least – I don't know, insinuated is not reported, but I feel like I've read that there's a connect, like Goodell, the commissioner's office, the league, whatever we want to put on it, wanted a team to put that forward, and the Lions cooperated.
apparently that is the case. At least that's what the tea leaves are saying. You're right. There's not something outward necessarily just saying they told them to do this, but it would make sense, right? Here's why the league wants it to pass, because from Roger Goodell's eyes, and I get this. I talked about this on Extra Point Show today and the Tush Push as well, and I'm kind of torn with this one, with the seeding, because I think that for many years, you're like, okay, you win your division, like you get a home game. That's the reward. That's right. Like you win your division. It's a grueling season. You take care of business. You get rewarded. The pushback I've seen from people is, well, all of a sudden we're not going to make the division, you know, worth anything. No, that's not the case. You're still making the playoffs if you win your division. Like that's the reward. Even if you're in a stinky division, you win, you're making the playoffs. But what the league, the angle the league is taking it from, and this is why I think it actually isn't a bad idea. You're going to get games mean more in week 18. I mean, right now you might get two or three games that have a lot riding on it. The last couple of years, guys, we were wondering what game is going to be flexed to Sunday night because you only had the one last year that really meant that much. You had the one year before with the Bills and the Dolphins. Otherwise, it's a lot of games that kind of don't mean anything. Well, guess what? A lot more games on week 18 are going to come into play because now you need to win to maintain a home seed, a third or a fourth. Yeah, you've won your division, but now you can't rest your players because if you lose, you're going on the road. And that's why the league wants it to pass. And quite frankly, I don't think that's a bad reason.
I theoretically agree. The thing I'm worried about, Sal, like it's obviously it's all about, TV eyeballs, better games, better matchups, meaningful, you know, the outcomes are meaningful, therefore more people will watch. And, you know, that makes sense to me, obviously. I'm not an idiot. You've only got 18 weeks of your season, and you're sort of diluting one of them currently with the way things are and how many teams are able to rest. I just think the league keeps adding 17 games. It's eventually going to get to 18 games. Now we're going to change it so there's, you know, it's more competitive, which means less rest for the athletes. And sure, as a fan, provided nothing goes wrong there, I would like to see better games. But I also respect the guys needing rest. I mean, having to play Week 18 2 years ago crippled the Bills.
Yep.
With that game, and then following what happened in the wild card game against Pittsburgh. And so with such a grueling sport and it's so hard on the players, I appreciate that there is a potential window, if I handle my business, that I can get a bye week, even if I haven't earned an actual bye week by being the one seed. I think doing this coupled with removing the two from having a bye is just, it's really hard on the players, I think.
I think it's a very valid argument. There's no doubt. And I think those arguments are being made probably as we speak or whatever this week about, hey, wait a minute now. We've taken care of business. We did exactly, you know, what we were supposed to do. You know, if you look back and think about last year, for example. So if they did this, now granted, teams might play differently at the end of the year, so this could impact it. I totally get it. But last year, it would be drastically different in the NFC on who hosted and who didn't. In the NFC, the Lions and Eagles still would have been, if you go by what happened versus what would have happened if they go to the new format, Lions and Eagles would still be 1-2. But guys, last year, the Buccaneers and Rams hosted playoff games, and the Vikings and Commanders were on the road. If you did it this way, the Vikings and Commanders would actually host, and the Packers, and so Buccaneers and Rams would be on the road. And to me, you know, you look at drastically how different that is, and it just kind of goes to show you why the league thinks, okay, we can those games will matter at the end of the year. And then there's obviously the argument of, well, you have a better record anyway, so why shouldn't you be seeded higher, right? Mm-hmm. Like most games. Now, we know that not all of them. There's three games determined by your division in standing from the year before. But other than that, there's 14 games that are predetermined and kind of the same as everybody in your division. And then a lot of the games, not obviously totally the same in conference, but quite a few are. So it's a really good argument. I'm torn. I don't care kind of either way, but I understand the league's position on this.
In last year's example, Washington would have been the 4 instead of the 6 and yes. hosted Green Bay, which was the 7, as opposed to going to Tampa. I'm not sure that's better. Playing Green Bay at home maybe is harder than going to Tampa was, and they won the game in Tampa. Tush-push stuff, I'm still a little bit confused by what the agenda is of the many teams, apparently. I mean, it takes three quarters, but the betting markets say they'll get it in terms of banning the play. And I fear, Sal, that it will lead to another layer, another thing where we have officiating that's confusing. where it's another mm-hmm. new rule, and he didn't actually have his arms around him or on him. He had his, you know, he was blocking the lineman, pushing the lineman forward or whatever, you know, fits within the rules here. I don't love the play, but I feel like at this point, and I've changed my position on this, banning it isn't worth it.
I have the same position I've always had on this. I totally understand. I think you could open that up. I've always believed this should be not legal. I've never liked having the ability to push a runner forward. It was never allowed in football. Growing up, it was something I knew that you just could not do. You could never pull a runner forward. Growing up, it was always something I knew you could not do. Suddenly, over the last 20 years, it's been happening. I'm like, where's the flag? Then you realize a few years ago, they just took the rule out. They just, like, it vanished. Where is it? It's gone. There used to be a rule called aiding the runner. You can't do that. You can't push the runner forward. In 2006, they just said, no, it's too, and to your point, Mike, which is right, it's too hard to adjudicate. It's too hard to really see what's happening. Guys, but here's part of it for me, which is high school gets it right and they do it. And I don't know. I haven't heard from enough. I've talked to high school officials. I have a friend named Al who listens regularly to WGR, and he texted me today and he said, it's a rule in high school. We have no problem with it. But the rule in high school is you can push the pile. You can't specifically push the runner. And I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to every single high school game and polling coaches on how much officiating they're getting, like, people mad. Well, he pushed the runner. He pushed the pile. I don't even think it happens all that often. But to me, it just seems like a simple rule that should have always been on the books and never gone away. I don't like it. I just don't think it's a part of football. I think that you should give a defender a chance to tackle a player without somebody pulling him forward or pushing him into you. I think that, to me, ban this. But don't I don't want to take the position of ban the tush push. That's where I come from. It's not, to me, don't ban the tush push. I just think you should not have aiding the runner, which is pushing a runner forward or pulling a runner forward.
Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. Flag football in the Olympics is happening, and today it was mm-hmm. unanimously voted on that the NFL players will be eligible to play. Do you have any idea where it goes from here? It's still 3 years out, but how the team is chosen, it might only be 12 players, 32 teams. That's pretty selective. You know, there's no linemen really in flag football, but still, you've got a practice season, and maybe teams will vary on just how willing they are to let their players participate, if that's even going to be allowed, right? I mean, here we have the agreement between the parties that the players will be eligible. Anything you can add to that?
Yeah, so when the proposal was written last week, I don't know, and I have to go back and look if there's anything changed today about the proposal to make me understand a little bit more about this, because there was some ambiguity, and I know, you know what, the guys on One Bills Live had Nick Shook on today, and I didn't listen to that necessarily, I knew he was coming on, but I had a back and forth with Nick Shook on Twitter, because he actually put together a team that would, you know, here's a good team for flag football. Mm-hmm. And I read the proposal, and what he had tweeted something about only one team per player. In his replies, I saw this, and I'm like, oh, let me look at that. Here's what it is. Does the rule actually say only one team per player can participate, or does it say one team per player per country? Because the way I read it, it seemed like that to me from the original proposal, meaning Germany could have an NFL player, and Italy could have an NFL player, and, you know, United States could have an NFL player. And I think that kind of changes the equation a little bit, because now maybe you have 3, 4, 5 players on a team playing in the Olympics. And that opens up even more of a, okay, we got some guys here. Let's make sure they're all safe and all of that. The reason they're doing this, though, is, and I know, like, yes, everything always comes down to money. And that's always, you know, what we're talking about, especially the international thing that Goodell said as well that we can talk about. But really, this is about growing the game. You know, I started playing tackle football in third grade, right? It was the 65-pound team. Now, I know those things exist still, but very few of them do. Now, it's really a lot of flag football because we have so much research about injuries and kids playing at younger ages, and you don't get it as much until high school, the tackle football. So what's happened is flag football has really grown in this country. And because of flag football growing, it's been amazing to see the growth of girls' flag football and women's flag football. We have high schools now have it. We have colleges who have it, men and women, which is awesome. And because of this, it's now growing globally. And the league really loves this. They love that people are playing football because once they get the exposure to flag football at the younger age, they start to get older, and then the game becomes, it's resonating with them at an older age, and then maybe tackle football. That's the genesis for this, and I don't think it's a coincidence they're doing this when the United States is hosting it in L.A., by the way.
No doubt, that's right.
Right.
There's a story about teams and their rights in other countries. I don't know if you know what that means, but most NFL teams were sort of allotted rights in certain countries.
Yes.
Maybe in March. And three were not, including the Bills. But today, I believe it was announced the Bills are assigned to Canada or vice versa. What else needs to be said here?
Well, I don't know if you were around, Mike, when we talked about this a little bit and why the Bills, like, there was never a designation for the Bills.
I hope I wasn't because I have no memory of it.
Okay, so it's a good question, and I got an answer to it. Jeremy asked me, actually, back during the owners' meetings, he said, okay, do you guys remember when during the owners' meetings they had this tweet and this thing that came out? There was actually there was a press conference on it and said, here are all the teams that are affiliated with international cities. And you have this team in Germany, this team in, and some teams had two of them. You remember that graphic?
Yes,
maybe there's someone out there.
I remember that graphic too. And I remember it prior to this March.
That's right. But every year it's a little bit more, right?
Oh,
Bulldog,
I see.
Where more
right.
teams are being
right.
added, right? Gotcha. So that's why they have it. Well, the Bills have never been assigned. And it's like, well, wait a minute. Why are the Bills not in? Like, why are they not in Canada? It makes sense because Toronto's right there. And I got the reasoning. It totally makes sense. So apparently what happens is every NFL team has kind of exclusive marketing rights to what they call their HMA, their home market, right? Which is within 75 miles of where they are. Toronto actually falls into that. So the Bills actually already have like exclusive, like they're the team, they can get marketed in Toronto and keep all that revenue like that. When you get assigned a country, okay, you have first priority to be marketed, but you must still split 32 ways with all the marketing that comes with it. So in this case, if the Bills were assigned Canada, then even in Toronto, they would have to split all of the revenue 32 ways, even though it's Toronto. So from what I was told at the owners' meetings, and maybe this is what happened then today, is the Bills were saying, look, we have no problem. Like, we would love to market in Canada, but you can't take away our home market area of Toronto where we're 100% the team getting all the revenue, if that makes all the sense, right? Because if that makes sense, because the way it was set up before, if they just said, oh, Buffalo is Canada. Well, wait a minute. Now we got to share all that money from Toronto with 32 other teams, whereas we never had to do that before. And they wanted to protect that ability.
Cincinnati also is teamed up with Canada in this because there's more, you know,
right.
teams than there are markets, I guess, that are in play for these things.
Right. I hope that makes sense, what I said. And I think that's a good reason why it never really happened. Because if you're the Bills, why would you say, yeah, we'll split everything from Toronto 32 ways when you're already getting everything in Toronto 100%?
And so with this now, them being assigned Canada, they don't have to share Toronto? They still have that?
I don't know that. Okay. I don't know that. What I was told again was, hey, the Bills could eventually be in Canada, but they want to strike a balance and say, we're going to do that. We want to maintain that Toronto's in our home market.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? So I don't know if that's the agreement. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I'd have to look into that. But I know that was the reason.
Finally, maybe the Bills preseason schedule was finalized and announced. One home game. It's the first of the three preseason games, Saturday afternoon against the Giants, August
9th.
August 9th, Bills are taking on the Giants at 1 p.m. That's the same night the Goo Goo Dolls are playing down at KeyBank Center, by the way. I know that because I'm a Goo Goo Dolls fan, and I was like, ooh, if the Bills are playing that weekend, hopefully it doesn't conflict. We'll see. But in the meantime, the other thing that strikes me is you have the Giants at home. I wonder, I don't know, maybe we can, you know, ask obviously the Bills and Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean over the next couple of weeks at OTAs. Does that open the door to joint practices here in Buffalo leading up to that game with Joe Shane and Brian Daboll and them?
Maybe so.
What have the Bills had any tendency to be open to that you know of, like sharing practices? It's happened, I know. Like, is it something that you know that they like to get on the docket?
Well, they did it last year, so, right. You know, remember we went to Pittsburgh last year?
Right.
So I think it, from what they've always told us, Bulldog, is we're not opposed to it as long as it's the right team and situation. And that's why they did Carolina with Ron Rivera the 1 year, and that's why they did Mike Tomlin and the Steelers last year. Like, they want to make sure they're doing it with a team that they can trust, that they're doing it right, they're approaching it right, and they both kind of have the same mindset of how these practices want to go. You know, so I would think, because it's Joe Shane and Brian Daboll, that maybe that would work out, but you never know.
We'll see if there's a handshake between the coaches after this game, if it lasts longer than a millisecond. The Bills also play preseason games at Chicago and at Tampa. So just
which
the
is
one
weird,
home game,
right?
I said.
Because they're playing at Tampa in the regular season as well. I mean, I'm saying they're playing the Buccaneers in the regular season as well.
Yeah. Well, it will be all different players, and I'm not kidding.
It's just right.
It'll
that's
be all, true.
All different players. True, right? We're not going to run the real stuff, so I don't think there's really anything at risk right. there.
Yeah, that's true.
I'll have the laundry on. That's really all.
That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Sal.
You got it.
All right, it's our dude Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. His appearances are always brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
Next, we're going to take advantage of an opportunity to chat with an author of a book about small-town baseball, specifically Batavia, former home of the Muck Dogs. Is the new college team there called the Muck Dogs now? It might be. Anyway, the author's name is Will Bardenwerper. He's got an event tonight in Buffalo that will help him promote and talk about his book when we come back. Mike Schopen and the Bulldog here. This is WGR. Let's go. This will be a treat. Our guest on the Wester Hotline is Will Bardenwerper. He's appearing at an event in the city tonight. We'll get you the details on that. And his new book, Homestand, Small Town Baseball and the Fight for the Soul of America, is available now. Will, we're Mike and Chris. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. The Batavia Muck Dogs. I appreciate this book for, among other reasons, for getting to know a little bit more of their history and their importance, as you illustrate in the book, Homestand. How did you, I don't think you're from the area, how did you get to Batavia for this project?
Well, it was kind of just a lucky coincidence. I had written an article in Harper's Magazine about the death of baseball's Appalachian minor league. I shouldn't say the death, but it was when MLB decided to essentially eliminate it, along with the 40 teams that they cut back in the initial word came out back in 2020. And so one of the readers of that article was Bill Kaufman, who is a longtime Batavia Muck Dog season ticket holder. And author himself, and he reached out to me and told me, you know, hey, you know, I loved your article. It really resonated with me. Everything you wrote about these Appalachian League communities reminded me of the Muck Dogs and the community that we have up here. Would you like to come up here? I'll grab you a beer. We could talk baseball. And one thing led to another. I met with him. I met with some of his friends, and it just occurred to me, hey, maybe this story is not only the death of affiliated professional baseball in this community, but its rebirth in the form of this collegiate Woodbat team that they stood up to fill the hole that had been left by MLB.
So how did you end up, how much time did you end up spending? You came to meet this gentleman for a drink and to talk about it. When did you make the decision to sort of embed yourself in Batavia and take on a project that grew to, well, this book?
Well, it's the book writing process is a long one. So I would say I spent the better part of, at least a year doing the reporting and the research, commuting back and forth from my home outside Pittsburgh to Batavia. It's about a 4-hour drive that I'm now pretty familiar with.
we know it. We know it.
Doing it as we speak to go up to that event tonight. So I spent a year getting to know him and some of his friends before the season started, because I didn't want to just start cold, you know, on opening day, having to literally walk into the ballpark and introduce myself and try to determine, you know, whose stories I was going to tell in the course of this book. So I had a little bit of a head start the winter preceding the season that I spent chronicling the Muck Dogs. And then I spent the year after that putting the book together, writing it, and ultimately getting it published. And it just came out a few months ago.
Will, how, if this is the right way to put it, quintessentially small town baseball was Batavia? Like, you made the choice, you found the connection, and as you're going through the year and the project, did it feel like you made a good choice?
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the things I really try to communicate in the book is what really makes baseball at this level so special and how it's distinct from what you see, you know, really any major professional sport, whether it's, you know, Major League Baseball or the NFL. You know, and I think, you know, part of it just simply comes down to the money. $99, you can get a season ticket to the Muck Dogs, whereas $99, you know, will barely get you in the door to a lot of major professional sporting events. And as a result of that, what you see is you see a lot of the same people going day in and day out throughout the course of the summer. You see these different generations coming together where you see, you know, 80-year-old grandparents, their children, their children's children playing catch along the right field line. So the vibe is really a lot more of kind of like a community picnic or a family reunion than something that, you know, you would find at like Yankee Stadium or Citi Field. Not that there's anything wrong with that experience, but I think this one is kind of special and unique. And one of the reasons I wrote the book is that I think we should be doing the best we can to preserve it and not cut it back and eliminate it.
Right. As the title of the book indicates, The Fight for the Soul of America. I don't know, somebody listening might think that sounds really dramatic, but you're talking about small towns, Bill, here, who have losing the baseball team on top of losing everything else that made communities like that vibrant. It's like maybe just one bridge too far. You know, you took our industry, you took our whatever it is, whatever shoe fits here. It's happened all over the country. You know, traveling around small towns, like a lot has changed, and to lose the baseball team on top of it might be like one more blow than you can stand. It baseball could be the thing that keeps you afloat just emotionally while all the other stuff has gone sideways on you.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that I tried to get across in the book, was that in many of these cities, not all of them, but a number of them were ones that had already been struggling economically for years. And in some cases, this was kind of like one of the last fun, affordable things they had left, and to have this taken away was really unfortunate. I write in that article I referenced, I talk a lot about Pulaski, Virginia. They had the Pulaski Yankees, and this is a small, remote town in western Virginia. You know, they had gone through their own hard times, but they had this connection to Yankee Stadium, to New York City, that was really something special and gave them a lot of pride. You know, they could see future big leaguers play in their tiny little town in the pinstripes. And to have that removed was something that I think really hurt. And, you know, that's something I try to capture in the book.
Will Bardenwerper is our guest. The book is called Homestand, Small Town Baseball and the Fight for the Soul of America. I've been to, I should put it in the past tense, I guess, a couple of Batavia Muck Dogs games that I think of fondly. One, this, you know, is a fun thing about minor league baseball, especially when it happens at like the A-ball level, is if like a manager or a pitching coach is somebody you remember watching in the majors. And in this case, it was Bob Stanley. I remember the whole night, I just couldn't take my eyes off Bob Stanley. Like, that's really him right there, standing right there is Bob Stanley.
Game six, Bob Stanley, there he is.
It was also because they were very generous. I was on the air and like, you want to come out? Sure. I might have 10 friends, like, here's 10 tickets. And we got there, 10 tickets behind the plate at Dwyer Stadium, right, Batavia?
That's it, yeah, correct.
10 tickets, we're sitting together. It's like the fourth inning now, and people come over and they tell us that they think we're in their seats. And it was very confusing because the tickets were both like exactly where we were sitting. But it turned out that our tickets, all 10 of them, were for the next night. So I like to think that we were that eager to get out there that we just went a day early and, you know, they still hooked us up. So, Will, tonight you'll be in Buffalo at The Place on Lexington, Buffalo Books and Beer. I just recently found out about this group, and with that, your appearance. What's it going to be like?
I have not attended one of these either, so I guess I'm going to find out. But I'm pretty confident it'll be a good time. That one of the hosts is actually a Buffalo-based writer, Brian Kastner, who's a fellow veteran. I was an Army infantry officer. He was an EOD technician in the Air Force and wrote a really good book about his experience doing that. And so, yeah, so he kind of stood up this organization where, you know, you get together, you have a few beers and you talk books. So I think it should be a good time.
Are you going to be reading from the book or just talking about the book, sort of like we're doing right here now?
I think it's going to be, I may read a little bit, but it's going to be more of just a relaxed conversation, mm-hmm. kind of like you'd find on like a longer form sort of podcast. So he'll have some questions for me. I'll answer them, and then hopefully we'll take some questions from the audience.
Some of your guests tonight might remember Ricky Williams playing for Batavia.
Yeah, well, some of the guests actually will be characters in the book, which will be interesting because it's going to be a little bit of a reunion. Some of the folks in the book actually live in Buffalo, so they're going to join us. I think we may get some Batavia fans there as well, so nice. It'll be fun. And, yeah, you're right. I heard some Ricky Williams stories. I heard lots of stories about Ryan Howard and Chase Utley back when they were a Phillies affiliate. And, you know, that's one of the things. You go to any minor league city, and the first thing people will tell you is which future major leaguers they saw in their town. So, you know, in this case, it was a lot of the Phillies and some Cardinals as well.
Right. Just go way back, maybe Batavia, to when the Red Wings, Rochester Red Wings, were affiliated with St. Louis, like pre-Baltimore. It's a long history. And, you know, congratulations and thank you for helping to preserve it with this book. One more time, it's called Homestand, Small Town Baseball and the Fight for the Soul of America. Will be out at The Place on Lexington starting at 7. Are you going to make it? You're on the road. You said you were on the road.
I am. I'm at a rest stop right here in Orchard Park, not far from the Bills Stadium. So I will be there with any luck pretty soon.
You'll make it very soon.
All right.
That's right.
Well, enjoy The Place. The Place is a great place. I know that sounds weird. I'm not trying to be cute, but it's a super cool joint. So you've landed in a good spot, Will.
No, I love that area. I've been able to spend a little bit of time there, so I'm looking forward to it.
Will, what's the best way for you for people to buy this?
Really, anyway, it's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, most independent bookstores. So I encourage anyone listening to check it out, and it should be pretty easy to get their hands on.
Very good. Thanks for your time today. Good luck with it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Will Bardenwerper, Homestand, Small Town Baseball, and the Fight for the Soul of America, embedded with the Batavia Muck Dogs.
I knew Matt. We were going to talk to Will.
Matt,
yeah, but even going back, I think Paul Hamilton.
Oh, yeah?
Did some Batavia Muck Dog work. Howard had Niagara Falls, and I hope I'm not messing that up. I think Paul did some Batavia Muck Dogs work back in the day.
But yeah, yeah Matt wanted to know why he wasn't in it. I'm like, I don't know. I guess the guy didn't need you. I guess Will didn't need Matt. Big debate today at Matt's very successful site, Purple Insider, about whether baby carrots are good.
What's this now?
He has an intern that, like, objects to baby carrots or something. I forget exactly how he put it. Not a fan would be putting it mildly, perhaps. And Matt said he eats them like a snack, like they're chips.
Yeah.
Baby carrots.
Yeah.
He's starting to question himself.
I wonder. All I have are questions, so I don't have any answers. I'm not expecting
you didn't see the segment.
I'm not expecting you to have any answers. Does this person dislike carrots in general, or prefer to have to pull a giant carrot out of the bag, peel it, chop it up, and then eat it?
I don't think
because the baby
that.
Carrots really that's the they give you that without having to do any of that.
I don't think it's even that.
Okay, I don't understand what the problem is with. I like baby carrots.
You would, I want to say, not in like sort of a Balkian way, you would, but just like, you know, in a sincere way, you would like baby carrots. If I had to guess, I'd be like, I bet you always eat them. Like three times a week.
No, I wouldn't go that far, but I do like them. I often think I should have baby carrots here rather than a bag of chips.
Yeah, there you go. What about carrot chips?
No, one or the other.
Just compromise.
Chips or no. We often have these chips that are made out of, Lord even knows what.
Plants.
I don't know. They're just like, what are we doing here? I'm sorry. This is not working for me at all. I know it's better for me, but no.
You're not for the healthy chips.
No. Chips or healthy stuff. And I don't need those.
Never Fritos.
I don't need those commingling.
Never Fritos.
Definitely never Fritos. That's
never Fritos.
100% right.
Latest on one high draft pick in the recent NFL draft. When we return, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here, WGR. How do you like my magnet / ball marker today?
Oh,
can you see
wow.
that on the camera? It's
wow.
pretty small.
That's a ball marker?
Well, I used it as one. It's a magnet.
It's a
fridge magnet.
It's a little big for a ball marker.
Vintage Bengals.
I think I would be offended by the size of that ball marker.
As whom? As other ball markers?
As someone playing with you. Like, you put that down on the green. I don't know. It's cumbersome.
It's definitely not cumbersome. It's offensive.
For
it's
a ball marker? That's like three times the size of a ball marker.
But you don't have to touch it.
No, but I might have to work around it.
Oh, well, I mean, I'm going to move it for you anyway.
Okay.
It's just a little bigger. I mean, another guy in the group used a poker chip. It's no bigger really than a poker chip.
It's also way bigger than, yeah. No.
I think this is the trend. Are you seeing different? Are you people using dimes? Like, where do you even get a dime?
I don't know. I've got, I don't know. I bought new ball markers this year that are about the size of a dime. Maybe a nickel.
What are they, like, tops. Personally engraved or anything? Like that?
No, they have a logo for Delaware Park on them.
Okay.
Which are nice.
So they are kind of special.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, I like my 1980 Bengals helmet magnet.
I mean, it's definitely a creative use of a mini helmet.
Yeah, yes.
I'm not dogging you for that. I just, I don't know, you pull that out of your pocket, throw that down on the green. It's just like, geez, I don't know. Why don't you just use a deck of cards to mark your ball? What are you doing over here?
Maybe I will now after that crack. Tennessee Titans. Cam Ward splitting reps with Will Levis. Remember our one Titans guest who I asked about Levis, and not in a rude way or anything, he's like, he's not going to be on the roster.
Right.
And I'm like, okay. Well, because I had it in my mind that he probably shouldn't be on the roster. It's just sort of weird. He wasn't a first-round pick, early second, though. And if they're done with him, which they almost have to be with this draft pick of Cam Ward, then it's a little bit like the Patriots and Joe Milton. Only, well, two things maybe. One, it's much more draft capital, so it could be that much more awkward. The other is, maybe you have less reason to think that Joe Milton is bad. Because Levis was kind of bad. He just wouldn't throw the ball away. Like, he just had to take shots.
Yeah.
And he is kind of maybe a poor man's Jameis Winston, somebody who just couldn't resist getting the ball down the field, whatever. So, anyway, as they start their minicamp stuff, they're splitting reps with the ones.
Well, enjoy that while it lasts, because I agree with our guest and with this. If I were really interested in Cam Ward's development and the Tennessee Titans, this were the Bills. I was like this with Josh Allen. Hey, you want Cam Newton to come here and back up Josh Allen? No, I don't. I don't need a guy, and Will Levis is way further down the pecking order than Cam Newton, who was a former MVP, but still. You've started a lot of games for this team over the last 2 years. I don't need you hanging out in the shadows if this is bumpy at all, because guys on the team, maybe even forget about the fan base, might think, Levis. So just get him out of there.
Would you give a sixth for him right now here?
No.
I mean, speaking of a poor man's whoever, Levis and Allen. Allen is boardwalk. I don't know if Levis is even like Baltic. He might be income tax or something.
Right.
That's out of line. I don't think he's income tax.
It's the railroads.
He's got to be positive, net positive.
Are the railroads better than Baltic? I don't think I got that right.
Oh,
yeah, I didn't get that right.
Oh, you're showing your ignorance.
I got that so wrong. Yeah.
The railroads are
What about the utilities?
Is that, they're okay.
All right.
The railroads, you can just dominate monopoly with the railroads. Right. If you get three.
Oh, you're set.
The easy move is, when you're playing with, like, kids, or even perhaps adults who want to get the game over with, because they know with Monopoly they're signing up for a lengthy session.
That is often describing me.
It's a terrible game, but everybody knows it. Get the railroads, and right away, deal. Maybe two different people have the reds. Bam, you throw a red for, like, B&O. Every time anybody lands on those things, $150, $200, That's just as sure as income gets.
Money in the bank.
That's just as sure as it gets. A sure thing. There's rarely a sure thing in life. But that is one right there, the railroads.
I haven't played Monopoly since the kids were little. We had the Star Wars version of Monopoly, which I don't know.
I have St. Louis Rams Monopoly.
Really?
Yep. I don't know why. I have no idea why, but I have St. Louis Rams Monopoly. If I find it, I'll bring it in. It should live here.
Yes,
in this room?
Yes, it should.
It should live in this
room.
In
the corner collecting dust forever and ever.
Never opened.
Right.
Mine is never opened.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Rams Monopoly. Has the show ever sounded older? The St. Louis Rams. I don't think it has. Every once in a while, we get the opportunity to talk to Warren Sharp, and we did so today on the Bills schedule and the nuances, and there are many. We'll have that for you next here on WGR.